Gentlemen, you're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Now, I want to thank you for tuning in this evening, and you can thank yourself for what you're about to learn this evening, Thursday, the 18th of March, 2010. Thursday, the 18th of March, 2010. Now, ladies and gentlemen, first, the cursory information. If you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time or HOTT, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona 85925. The website, HourOfTheTime.com. That's HourOfTheTime.com. The studio number in Arizona, 928-333-2942. And the studio number in Canada, 613-733-4324. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to share research or ask questions that weren't addressed on the air or clarification, inquire about conferences, or send hate mail, you may do so by writing HourOfTheTime at Hotmail.com. That's HourOfTheTime at Hotmail.com. Now, we have this evening part two in our series on civil disobedience, and we'll be getting more into the framework and legal side of the historical use of civil disobedience, where it's accounted for, why it's needed, how it's needed, and it is really a crucial factor nowadays with all the kings sitting back in the Washington District of Criminals that think they can just run things however they want. The only way to fix our republic and restore our freedoms is going to be through mass civil disobedience. Individual disobedience to unconstitutional laws, administrations, bureaus, bureaucrats, appointed officials, unelected, unaccounted for, agencies, that's the only way. Like we said, if everybody just took one or two across this country, as of hundreds of millions of adults, and just said, I'm not going to do it anymore. As we pointed out yesterday, there were the whole bureaucratic system that's illegal and unconstitutional would have one massive heart attack. If you haven't figured it out yet, and I would hope you would have, our so-called elected officials refuse to listen anymore. There's a long train of events to show and prove that. And it would be impossible, I think, in the next year and a half of broadcast to detail all of them. But, ladies and gentlemen, we, for freedom's sake, even if it's just an ideological battle for you, or maybe it's a battle of self-preservation, historical, who cares what the reason is? If you realize that you must be solution-oriented and take a proactive stance in restoration of freedom in our republic and our Constitution to its full power, then you will realize the importance of this series. Ladies and gentlemen, we are on the brink of losing everything that was built. The sacrifices people have made throughout history, in war, or just here in the streets, strides we made technologically, in the areas of even the crucial fundamentals, the groundwork for freedom, strides we made to protect through our history, property rights, one of the very, very most fundamental, absolute core of the foundations of this country, personal liberties, all the Bill of Rights, all 10 Bill of Rights. We are about to lose every bit of it. And unfortunately, those who are sitting in offices everywhere are doing nothing. You, as an individual and an individualist, are the only hope, ladies and gentlemen. No magic congressman or presidential candidate is going to fix the situation. If they were, they would have done so already. Now, if you want to lose every bit of it that we still have, what little we still have left, and all those values and core fundamentals of freedom that a lot of people do still have in the back of their head, they just don't understand the concepts. It's that reading versus comprehending concept we discussed before. It's that hearing versus listening concept. For instance, you may hear elevator music, but you probably don't listen to it. So, ladies and gentlemen, the time for sitting back and letting someone else do it for you is gone. And the time for waiting on anybody in any bureaucracy at any level to fix things is also gone. This country has been subverted. That's all there is to it. And it's time to strike back and strike while the iron's hot. Now, the usual musical break will be coming up here for you to get your notebooks and snackies, whatever you want, for the duration of the broadcast. And I hope you are taking notes, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you do realize that we can't keep expanding our base and doing more speaking endeavors and conferences or what have you without your support. The Hour of the Time is listener supported. That's why we're unfettered and say what needs to be said when it needs to be said and post what needs to be posted on the site. We don't have somebody approving what we put out. So I hope you look to the hourofthetime.com, our website, and then go to the Hot Shop and look for materials that you can use to better yourself and your family. Now, I just got an update today. It's really cool. I've already got solar that I've shown in a very a different configuration at the conference here last fall in Arizona to the participants, and those are even on a DVD. Soon here we'll be releasing all those DVDs from past conferences from 06 up in package sets. You're going to buy all of them. You're not going to pick and choose. That would just be a logistical nightmare on our end because we don't have some kind of paid staff. We don't do that. So those will be available. But I just got an update from the solar panel company for my next shipment, and my next shipment to put online for our solar generator projects will be here tomorrow, which is nice because I don't have to tear some stationary units down just to make the little film clips for the website and for YouTube page and for the shopping cart and to send people. Okay? That's why I'm going to have it. The new as you would receive it through the shipping company, solar generator package and out and running at night, during the day, so you can see how much stuff can be ran off of it at a single time. That is good news that they're bumped up the schedule for my next shipment because I really didn't want to tear into some of the more permanently installed stuff here at the studio and on our camp equipment and trailers and up at the ranch for whales that I've installed just to make an ad. That wouldn't make any sense. Also, if you're coming to the PA conference or you've considered it, you better act quickly. We just today got inquiries from two more gentlemen. I'll let them in, but we're going to cut it off really quick here in the next week or two. I'm really thinking the last week, which is just a partial week at that, the week of the 29th, 30th, and 31st of March, because at some point, out of just courtesy, we need to give a final head count, the ups and ups and downs and ups, and changing who's coming with who isn't fair to cooks and administrators, people like the Canadians, making all of your DVD packages that you take home as part of your tuition. 4,000 book PDF book library in hard cases, 10 DVD packages, DVDs, because there's so much information. Otherwise, we'd be using like 52 CDs. So everybody needs to be able to have a final head count. So if you're interested, like the two gentlemen who just contacted today, you better move on it. Contact me at my email, hourthetime@hotmail.com, and make any arrangements that you need to make. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, after this musical break, we will proceed on with part two tonight on civil disobedience. ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, Thursday the 18th of March, 2010. Now, ladies and gentlemen, as we stated already in the previous broadcast, and is completely evident out there by just looking around, it doesn't take much of a person to figure out that the political process currently will only slow down the growth of bureaucracy. It's not going to stop it. And the only hope left is your individual disobedience and disruption of the bureaucracy, as will be outlined in this audio series. For ultimately, ladies and gentlemen, it's been the sheeple's blind obedience that has made it a slave, a chattel servant. You see, bureaucratic law, as it's called, immediately loses its hold on anyone who refuses to obey it, or who at the very least chooses to circumvent it and to disrupt its enforcement. Now remember, throughout this series, we defined in part one, so remember that and go back to that if you missed it, bureaucracy and bureaucrat, how it will be throughout this series. And remember, law oftentimes is the color of law concept, not positive law. It's administrative code. It's not real law. It's not the Constitution. It's not acts of Congress assembled. There are two categories there, ladies and gentlemen. Bill and I together covered that on the air. Acts of Congress and acts of Congress assembled. Big difference. Now remember, ladies and gentlemen, one of the main purposes of the U.S. Constitution is to protect each individual from infringements from federal, state, or local governments. So each individual should have a vested interest in upholding the Constitution as the supreme law of the land by obeying all laws which are in harmony with it, and by disobeying or circumventing or disrupting the enforcement of all laws which violate it. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have already, since starting this series, a whopping 24 hours, gotten some severe threats. So I hope you heed this series closely. Obviously, someone does not like this content. Oh, well. If one part of a law or code or anything out there violates the Constitution, you have no duty, ladies and gentlemen, to obey it. Eliminating one part of a particular law, as they're called, renders that law incomplete and unusable, and therefore, obviously, that whole particular law or code or administrative outline must be disobeyed or circumvented and its enforcement disrupted. And when, for pragmatic reasons, one does obey an unconstitutional law, one still has the option of circumventing it or disrupting its enforcement. You see, ladies and gentlemen, ultimately, it is time for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of more of you to draw the line in the sand, if you will. I have made my decision long ago, and I live by it. Now, the choice of whether or not to disobey unconstitutional laws, bureaucratic actions, administrative codes, is purely up to you at this point. We are giving you the tools, and have been for years. And this series is going to outline hundreds and hundreds of tools, ideas, and information. This series or myself can't make that decision for you. This series or myself can't give you advice on whether or not you should disobey unconstitutional laws. All I can do is tell you the facts as they are and give you the information. What you do is up to you at this point. And ladies and gentlemen, it goes a lot deeper than just the here and now. It isn't just about the one census form. It isn't. That's a start, though. Don't get me wrong. And it isn't just about the one 26-page pamphlet with the threat of a $100-a-day fine if you don't fill it out from the USDA saying all of your food production capabilities, equipment capabilities, seed storage on your property. Those have gone out. I've had people that I know intimately and closely and are good friends that have received them. It goes much deeper than just the here and now. How do I pay rent this week? How do I pay my satellite television this week? How do I get that new download? Ladies and gentlemen, this is a long-term investment. And you look back through our great history in this country, and yes, it's easy to bitch and gripe constantly, but that's one of the problems, though. And the neutralizers out there love it. They love it. They take advantage of it. They use it constantly. It is so easy, ladies and gentlemen, to gripe and gripe and gripe. This is bad. This is bad. This is bad. And never look at the good history and side and facts of, let's just take it, let's narrow it down, of just the United States of America, just the Constitution, just what we've done. Neutralizers and bureaucrats will constantly bring up the worst in everything, just like the controlled media. That is on purpose, ladies and gentlemen. They have to undermine your morale and support, just like an enemy working a psyop upon troops. Tokyo Rose, for instance. Ladies and gentlemen, there's a lot of good in our history, and there's a lot of good reasons to have hardly any government and more freedom. History has proven it over and over again. Don't let it slip away. And it's going to take each and every one of you. The processes and history and documentation set forth in this series relies upon each individual determining the constitutional validity of every law that affects him or her. If you compare each law, administrative code, administrative ruling, bureaucratic agency, whatever it is that confronts you with the U.S. Constitution, and with an entire list of education and points and legal references and previous bureaucratic violations exposed in this series, you will be able to determine if any aspects of that particular law or code or procedure are unconstitutional. Then it's up to you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to give you the fish. I'm going to teach you how to fish. Now, I know someone in the past said that much more eloquently, so you don't need to email me about it. But that's what came into my head. Now, to this point, most people have trusted your bureaucrats to live up to their oath to uphold the Constitution. But because most of them haven't, we must now, each of us individually, chip away at the administration and enforcement of every unconstitutional law that affects us. Plain and simple. There isn't any choice anymore, ladies and gentlemen. There isn't, well, I can wait till tomorrow, or it's not convenient right now. Like I've said before, go ahead and save up that pocket full of convenience, and when you're behind a barbed wire fence in a prison camp, try to buy your way out of that with that pocket full of convenience. Each individual, ladies and gentlemen, has unique circumstances which determine the best way to individually deal with each law that affects him or her. You must be creative. Always think outside the box, if you will. Look at your own circumstances and develop angles that will work for you. Regardless, though, of your individual circumstances, each individual is definitely in a position to at least injure or nullify any given unconstitutional law in one of basically three ways. One, disobey it. Two, circumvent it. Or three, disrupt its enforcement. Individually disobeying or circumventing such laws or disrupting their enforcement will bring many Americans, most people, in fact, in this country, enormous financial benefits. And your pride in being an American, in practicing Americanism, in practicing individualism will grow. This series is showing you how each individual can make a difference on an individual basis. And if enough educated individuals do this, then unconstitutional laws and the petty little bureaucrats who enforce them will be neutralized. Individual initiative and action are essential to the reestablishment of our liberties. Individualism is what made America great. The liberty of all Americans will reappear if large numbers of individuals are disobeying, circumventing, or disrupting the enforcement and enforcers of unconstitutional laws. Presently, liberty exists only for a handful of you and us and me who are willing to take it. Until now, possibly, you may have not taken the individual initiative to do something about it. Many of you have been brainwashed into thinking that each of you individually doesn't count. Well, guess what? Each of you do count. Individually, you can make a difference. The bureaucracy, ladies and gentlemen, can only perpetuate its tyrannies upon people who are obedient and cooperative. Since obeying and cooperating are done individually, it is obvious that all unconstitutional actions rely upon, guess what? Your individual obedience and cooperation. Now, many bureaucratic laws, of course, are aimed at the majority of Americans, such as income tax laws. So the majority of Americans are hence victims of those laws. However, many laws and administrative codes are targeted at smaller segments of society. For example, unconstitutional civil rights laws are primarily aimed at employers. That's who are the victims there, as well as the person using that code, that bureaucracy, to gain and further themselves. Because you know what? By participating, they are becoming a slave. You may think it got you ahead. You may think it got you a job, even though you weren't qualified to have that job, and that it's getting you a paycheck for now. But guess what? Just as easily, the same bureaucracy, the same monster that created that nightmare for the employer that you think you benefited from can just as easily cut you out of it. Privileges, ladies and gentlemen, can and are meant to be taken away, not rights. The smaller number of victims of an unconstitutional law therefore, mean that a smaller total number of individuals are needed to traumatize the bureaucracy that enforces it. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. You are a victim of each unconstitutional law, act, or code that affects you. And likewise, you are a willing victim of the enforcement of each unconstitutional law, code, or act, which you do not disobey or circumvent or disrupt. Most unconstitutional laws which affect you take you and your family's hard-earned money or limit your ability to pursue opportunities. Therefore, when an American disobeys, circumvents, or disrupts their enforcement, he or she greatly enhances their real income and opportunities, as well as perpetuates their self-esteem and their birthright of their posterity. To the heirs and assigns forever, for example, in a particular set of circumstances, maybe an individual might find some unconstitutional laws too difficult to disobey. Then in that case, we move on to circumventing. And in such cases, circumventing is an appropriate procedure. Circumventing in today's world could be a process of using the loopholes in a law or using the narrow scope of a law as a basis for accomplishing whatever the law was trying to prohibit. For example, maybe an illegal code, administrative ruling, proceeding, bureaucracy, or agency may prohibit your specific method of operation. So, you merely restructure your method of operation to be slightly different than the operation prohibited by these codes, and immediately resume business. There are various ways this can be done. For instance, some of the ways you can disrupt the enforcement of unconstitutional laws are the following. Play one bureaucratic agency against another. Maybe get the Fair Trade Commission to sue the State Bar Association on antitrust violations. Suing bureaucrats personally for their violations of your constitutional liberties. Delay the bureaucratic agencies in their own court systems. Countersue bureaucratic agencies. Withhold essential information from bureaucrats. Now, just because I said essential, too, didn't mean I said required. Those are two different things. But if for a bureaucracy to perpetuate its illegal hold upon you and your liberties and freedoms, it requires A, B, C, and D, just give them A and that's it, or give them none. Expose bureaucratic informers publicly. Expose bureaucratic violations publicly. Maybe instigate civil service procedures for termination of the employment of offensive bureaucrats. Maybe sponsor, assist, and counsel others in their disobedience, circumvention, and disruption of illegal bureaucratic rules procedures. Require U.S. attorneys to prosecute offending bureaucrats. Educate potential grand jury members to investigate or indict offending bureaucrats. Educate jury members to rule against the bureaucracy or plaintiff in any prosecution or lawsuit which is based upon an unconstitutional law. Or just instigating any other creative actions against illegal codes, remedies, administrative procedures, and be like I say, innovative in your activities and creative. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick musical break here and then proceed on with what is American individualism and what is collectivism. Let's see which category you fit into. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to The Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. The website, hourofthetime.com. My personal email, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. If you'd like to write Hour of the Time or Hot, H-O-T-T, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The studio number in Canada, 613-733-4324. And again, here in Arizona, 928-333-2942. Now, ladies and gentlemen, at least if you're going to send a hateful message, at least keep it relatively short so as not to waste my time too much. I know that is the modus operandi behind most of them, but at least be courteous in your hateful attitude. You don't need to talk forever to make an idiotic point. Most people are quite capable of doing that with that mindset. So that's what they have, and that's what they're doing in a very short segment of time. Now, ladies and gentlemen, what is American individualism? American individualism. It's the practice of one American pursuing a dream and purpose regardless of all obstacles and in all opposition to all bureaucratic tyranny. With what was basically a strict adherence to the U.S. Constitution, especially prior to 1932, 1913, 1865, but you could say basically 1932. Prior to that, the bureaucracy, with few exceptions, was forbidden to encroach upon the liberties of individuals. And now today, the bureaucracy is the primary obstacle to American individualism. It seeks control. It seeks to control, regulate, and suppress individuals who pursue their career, their business dreams, or who exercise their constitutional right to unlimited free speech. And quite often, when individuals do succeed, then the bureaucracy taxes away the fruit of their success. Succeeding as an American individualist invariably requires opposing the bureaucracy by disobeying or circumventing its unconstitutional laws, codes, administrative procedures, or by disrupting their enforcement. At any one time, each American is either practicing or not practicing American individualism. Now, due to human weakness and due to such intensive bureaucratic obstacles, few Americans have been able to do so at all times in the span of a lifetime, practice American individualism. Ultimately, we all, at times, miss the target. An American individualist is also an American that is in pursuit of his or her dream and purpose. And remember that, ladies and gentlemen, that as long as you and I are in such pursuit, you and I are American individualists. Now, collectivism that has taken over society and government and bureaucracy today is the exact opposite of American individualism. There is nothing American about collectivism. Collectivism expounds that all individuals should be subjected to the collective opinion and rule of the majority, and that the bureaucracy must be superior to the individual, and that individuals rarely can rise from poverty without the assistance of the bureaucracy. Collectivists, for instance, believe that your hard-earned money should be taxed and redistributed to the little squirrels and bums who don't work as hard as you, and who didn't save their little squirrel acorns for the winter. Collectivists generally believe that success is an accident or a matter of luck, and so they seek to destroy it. They see no value in individual effort. Only the group counts to them, and they would make every individual accountable to the thinking of the group. Laws regulating the content of broadcasting and advertising, for instance, spring from collectivism. To the collectivist, for example, free speech is only appropriate if it is acceptable to the majority, or, as that famous quote that's bandied about, in the public interest. FCC rules, for instance, say exactly this. Ladies and gentlemen, this is supposed to be a constitutional republic, and America, not communist China. Ladies and gentlemen, collectivists endorse political philosophies of Marxism or communism or socialism or mixed socialism, and typically in America, for fear of political rejection, collectivists rarely admit they endorse Marxism or communism, but they are definitely quick to vocally criticize any American individualist opposition to Marxist or communist aggression. Indeed, you can recognize collectivists by what they say and by the company they keep. And as you will learn throughout this series, the collectivists in America are knowingly and unknowingly supporting the interest of world socialist government. Even one collectivist, world socialist, communist, Marxist, it doesn't matter, agent placed in an organization with 1,000 members can steer that entire group into endorsing socialist government programs. Then guess what? The agent provocateur can simply disappear, and a dupe can be left in his or her place. Collectivists also are usually incapable of envisioning a purpose or pursuing it without inflicting bureaucratic tyranny upon others. Collectivists would never have enough guts or will to pursue their purpose without bureaucratic assistance. And how do they do that? Well, the bureaucracy assists them in supposedly legally, but it comes down to controlling those individuals from whom they must steal income or property or precious liberties. For instance, when was the last time you heard anyone admit that they were a hypocrite or a backstabber? Hypocrites and backstabbers usually can't admit such even to themselves, and definitely not to others. So don't expect collectivists to admit it to themselves or to others that they are sugar-coated thieves, tyrants, and traitors. And since all people generally have to think that they are good or right, collectivists subconsciously develop justification for every proposal which would take or steal rights, liberties, and fundamentals from American individualist and give it to another group. Collectivists may call it taxation or redistribution and find even some human fault in the American individualist from whom they steal to justify their collective larceny, blackmail, and fraud. Collectivists grab at every minor human failing. Their reason for punishing the successful may be merely that they are rich or that their products have some imperfection, which all products do. Some people are emotionally swayed by distorted collectivist mudslinging. And next to an American individualist, a collectivist is a moral midget. But unfortunately, American individualists generally do not have the time or the inclination to defend themselves. Now, because American individualists have done nothing dishonest or larcenous towards collectivists, their minds are not busy building a mental and verbal case against them. Only thieves, derelicts, bums, hypocrites, traitors must justify what they do by protesting against the victim. American individuals don't have to justify anything because they are the victims. Collectivists have to justify everything. To identify those who have betrayed your trust, watch the people who are building a case against you, who are becoming angry or snotty with you, or who are accusing you of unfairness, or who are challenging the validity of your views, procedures, and policies. Their words and deeds will speak clearly of their betrayal. A person's conscious or subconscious cannot usually accept the fact that he or she has betrayed another. So, guess what? The person's subconscious mind cooks up a justification scheme to blame his or her victims. For instance, we have to regulate that area of the country because people are throwing trash around. We have to pass this administrative ruling or code because they're fishing incorrectly on this body of water. We have to provide socialist health care to everybody because insurance companies and doctors actually make a profit. We haven't taxed them completely out of existence yet. It goes on and on, ladies and gentlemen. We have to ban this certain class of gun using a boogeyman. Know, ladies and gentlemen, that your real friends are those who truly believe the Constitution is for the protection of your individual liberties. Collectivists project their own views onto others. They expect others to have their same limited vision and their same limited will. Accordingly, they support and promote the enactment and administration of laws which regulate American individualists. And because collectivists cannot make it on their own without coerced group cooperation, they assume those who succeed are doing something unethical. Therefore, in their little pea brain, collectivists can justify controlling others' activities and taxing their hard-earned profits and wages in order to redistribute those profits collectively among those with less initiative and less productivity. Now, collectivism is contagious, and don't think that it isn't. It infects the population. And guess what? Since fear sells quicker than fact, the collectivist can gain popular support when individual liberties are not protected from majority rule by the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution, ladies and gentlemen, when used, is the only obstacle standing between collectivists and their prey. Therefore, in this Cold War, for instance, each individual, an American individualist or Canadian individualist or wherever you may be, must uphold the Constitution, your charter, your freedom, whatever it may be, wherever you are. Now, although the bulk of Americans prefer individualism to collectivism, the majority of Americans also make one or two exceptions out of their own special self-interest. For example, with bureaucratic assistance, many farmers willingly receive farm subsidies for which we all pay. Most bankers willingly benefit from federal insurance for which we all pay. Most employees control their employers' hiring practices. And actually, most debtors control even the language used by bill collectors pursuing payment of a just debt. In fact, most doctors, lawyers, teachers, and most members of various other professional, as they're called, groups, support unconstitutional laws that protect, subsidize, or assist them. In the evil spirit of collectivism, the bureaucracy provides all the tyrannies. But ironically, the majority of Americans depend on the small percentage of individualists that create, develop, and motivate the production of the real wealth that subsidize their special interest legislation. Do they dare kill the goose that lays the golden egg? At the very least, they are going to bite the hand that feeds them. Yet, collective legislation creeps dangerously close to destroying the strong American individualists that are keeping America going. And we are on a limp at this point, ladies and gentlemen. We're not on a run to keep us going. We're not on a fast pace, a trot. We are barely limping along. Collectivists will give the illusion of security, for instance, to the weak, and even persuade many into perceiving themselves as weak. It can only take wealth from the strong to redistribute to the weak. The banking follies, ladies and gentlemen, are just that. 80s, 90s, this decade, are all proof that making loans to undeserving countries through lend-lease programs, foreign aid, or to individual bums out there, rewriting the rules for loans just so they can have a loan and feel empowered and help their self-esteem. Obviously, those people are not capable of handling the responsibility, and all it does is drag down the strong. The more American individuals there are in existence, ladies and gentlemen, at any one time, the safer our future will be. With increased numbers of individualists, the odds are also higher of an individualist being in the right place at the right time to protect an elderly citizen from muggers or to save a dam from breaking. And ladies and gentlemen, that's where we'll leave off tonight. And tomorrow we'll be getting into the wrap-up of the precepts of collectivism versus individualism and begin into our hardcore study, line by line, of the U.S. Constitution. I hope everyone heeded this evening's broadcast and last night's and every broadcast here at the hour of the time. And I hope all of you have a safe and a studious evening.